This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Monday, the 25th of April, the start of a new working week. Going to kick off with some of the big stories, business stories here in the UAE, including Masdar spreading its wings, big event in Cairo over the weekend. The UAE had a big presence there. Then we're going to be talking about travel. Some alarming predictions from the guys at the travel agency WeGo, who Tom was speaking to. 57% increase in the cost of flights this year compared to 2019. Yep, that's right. Do not adjust your set. Going to hear from Mahmoud Hamedan from WeGo a little bit later on. Then talking about real estate as well. So much talk about Russians buying real estate in Dubai. Well, we wanted to speak to a Russian estate agent to find the inside story. We did. Alessia Sheglova from Dacha Real Estate. Fascinating interview with her. And then finally, of course, the big international story of the past 24 hours. The election in France. Victory for Emmanuel Macron. Gonna get the thoughts of not one, but two French expatriates here in the UAE. All that to come. But first up, let's dive into those top business headlines. First of all, Tom, tell me more about this Masdar story. This is a big deal, the green hydrogen plant in Egypt. It came out of the summit in Cairo that we've had over the weekend. High-level UAE delegation there. I know you've been looking into this. What do we know?
We know that Masdar, along with Hassan Alam Utilities, have signed these.
Anyone heard of them this time yesterday?
Not heard of them before.
Not me.
Masdar, I had heard, but not Hassan Alam. But they've signed these two preliminary agreements, if you like, for the development and building of green hydrogen plants in Egypt. Renewable energy very much to the fore, obviously, for not just Masdar, but those across the globe at the moment. It's really been brought into focus, given the current rise in prices of commodities, energy commodities, and the import-export of other fuels as well. So what have we been told? They're going to use the knowledge that's been taken from Masdar, along with geography of other parts of the region, to expand the capacity to deliver that all-important zero-carbon energy solution that so many countries are looking for. It's seen as not just a move in the right direction, but yet more evidence as to why, lest we forget, not the COP28, just COP28 here, but also the next COP, which is actually going to be held down in Salalah, Egypt, I think, as well, 27, which was, what was it? There was a confusion
Egypt,
there.
Egypt's the next one, then it's Abu Dhabi, isn't it?
Yeah. So the next two come into the region.
Yeah.
And obviously that's very significant. So again, yet more interest as to why that might be the case and why we're seeing deals like this being done now. And the other reason is just simple. Got more wind down in Egypt. That's why the solar, the wind and the green hydrogen resources have more potential, because the coastlines that they can utilise down in Egypt. So the resources there allowing for the generation of renewable power at a competitive cost, the other big enabler here for green hydrogen production. So investment into Egypt, yet again, another story there, and Masdar continuing to expand its sphere of influence.
Green hydrogen is interesting, clearly.
I don't get it.
Don't get it at all.
No.
They're establishing a green hydrogen manufacturing facility. The electrolyzer facilities in the Suez Canal Economic Zone. I get it. I mean, I think it's a really good thing, and I support them. But we need to do a lot more research on this. We've had experts like Robin Mills talking about this, and we'll get more of them to come.
We need a chemical engineer, Rich. That's what we need.
That's what we need. Yes. Unfortunately, they're all successful billionaires who are far too busy to talk to us.
You mentioned green hydrogen to someone like Serena Kelly, and she thinks it's yet another sort of Marvel superhero or something like that, doesn't
it? Yes, it could well be, couldn't it? Could well be. Let's talk about travel, Tom, because you've got the guys from WeGo, the travel agency, coming in. And as we head towards not just Eid al-Fitr, but towards the summer break as well, travel agents will be hoping it's a busy time.
Yeah, and there's... I'm going to reserve judgment on this one until we've spoken to the guys from WeGo. The reason being that when I read this story and their research is showing that travellers here in the region are going to travel for longer, they're taking a longer holiday, and they're going to splash the cash on it summer 2022. two sides to that I get. And again, I'll throw it out to everyone here in studio for better judgment on this. On the one hand, I get it because people have not been able to travel that much recently. However, that has changed in the last 9 to 6 months, and people have been able to get away. You know, our co-presenter and colleague, Brandy Scott, is doing exactly that at the moment. And I would like to suggest that, yes, there is still that sentiment that people are sort of splurging because they've not been able to in the past. However, with the I word of inflation, with increasing prices, and prices actually rocketing at the moment, be that for your flights, be that for a hire car in Manchester over a weekend, be that for whatever you want, they are significant costs. And therefore, if you are going to travel for longer, if you're going to travel at all, you're going to have to put some splash a bit of cash or throw a bit of cash at the situation. If you're going to travel for longer, you're really going to have to budget accordingly, especially if you're going with the family.
Yeah, so I completely agree.
The only thing that we have seen there is we were talking to Emirates last week off the record, and again, they were suggesting that there was a lot
off
more...
Off the record, but Tom's going to tell you exactly what they said.
No, but it was like... there was
in the style of what Paul Scholes and Jesse Lingard.
The trends that are developing, which is people are spending more on their travel. And that's why you're seeing business class cabins filling up a lot quicker than economy class cabins. That's something that never happened before. That's not because of business travellers we discussed last week. That's just because of, you know what, I haven't travelled 3 years, so I might as well spoil myself.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We're all going on a summer holiday, but it's going to be an expensive one, nonetheless. Well, certainly, according to the latest findings and data from WeGo, the largest online travel marketplace here in the region, has revealed in the last couple of days that travellers will take a little bit longer on their holidays this year, and they're going to spend more on travel during the summer. To talk through the figures, absolute pleasure to be joined by the CCO, the Chief Commercial Officer and Managing Director for the MENA region and India at WeGo. It is Mamoon Medan, who joins us live on the line. Mamoon, thanks so much indeed for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So let's crunch this data with you, if you can. What do the figures tell you?
Yeah, as you just mentioned, you know, we're approaching summer, and we're steadily going back towards what we used to see in 2019, or probably we're going to exceed that in terms of demand, in terms of number of bookings, in terms of you know, recovery of the travel sentiment in general, which is great. But we're seeing a complete different set of you know, prices and costs coming across with the increase of demand. Generally, on the flights, we're seeing around 57% increase of price from this year versus 2019. Hotels is close to that; is around 55%. So, traveling this year is gonna be very, very expensive. But that's not affecting the demand so far from what we are seeing.
That's interesting because, as you say, 57% increase in year-on-year comparisons for flights, over 50%, 55% for hotels. That is a significant increase in numbers. But as you say, according to the searches, that's not putting people off travelling. So there's still the demand there.
Yes, indeed. I think you know, similar to what we've seen in China, a year and more ago, where they you know, there was a trend of a revenge spending in general. I think that's happening here as well on travel. People accumulated leaves over the past 18 months or more, and they are eager to travel. There are so many expats living in the region that want to go back and spend their proper holidays with their families and with their relatives. So many destinations are in promotion at the moment. So the overall sentiment is back to the usual trend that we used to see before COVID. Now, I think the pricing, to be honest, I think it's going to correct itself in the coming couple of months. There is lots of capacity to be added as well from the airline side. So today we're still operating with the reduced capacity that being put in action during the COVID period. But now with more destinations putting more easy protocols for travel, I think we're going to start seeing more and more demand on adding more flights to those destinations and getting capacity to back to 2019 levels or even more. So that should give more options, and that would affect the pricing and bring it down slightly.
What about the other trends for travel? What about trip duration or any other trends that you've noticed?
So in general, trip durations are on increase as well. Some destinations recorded 80% increase in terms of trip duration. So Oman is one of them. Saudi is another one with like 62% increase in the trip duration. Again, people are eager to go spend more time. We're seeing multi-destination coming back on demand. It wasn't the case last year where people used to go one destination, come back. Now, a little bit of more trip planning happening on that level. So occupancy is going high as well on the hotel side. In UAE, for example, we're approaching like 100% occupancy in some of the resorts and hotels, especially now for Eid holiday, and that's expected to continue. So in general, duration is approaching close to 80 plus percent in many destinations.
And in terms of that demand, are hotels doing their bit as well? Are people shopping around for deals? Do they want all-inclusive deals, etc.? And from what you're seeing, are hotels offering that?
Yeah, hotels are putting so many offers on the table today. There are so many packages being introduced recently. There are so many of the nearby destinations that are trying to put 3-4 days trips, bundles between flights and hotels, trying to make it attractive for the travelers from the region. The all-inclusive is definitely being a product people are seeking. We're seeing Turkey coming back into the mix again. With a higher duration, especially in the all-inclusive hotels, around 80% actually increase on demand happening to Turkey at the moment. Same goes to Azerbaijan, same goes to Egypt, and UAE, obviously Dubai in particular.
Last one. You mentioned there the potential correction for airline flights. Given the fact that a lot of people still have a lot of holiday time that they have not used because of lockdowns and pandemics, accumulated leaves, etc., is this also going to correct once people have used up those accumulated leaves?
I think in a way, yes, definitely. But I think we're going to see a new set of trends happening altogether from this part of the world. Once the travel sentiment keeps on building up, once the protocols get more eased, I think people will go back into multiple trips, short trips, making sure that they're using the allowance of leaves in general. But this year is going to be a bit different because, as you said, there are so many people who kept so much of leaves accumulated, and getting plans to spend them more during this coming summer.
It's going to be a good summer, and I hope that you do very well out of it as well. Mamoun, thank you very much indeed to you for your time this morning. Mamoun Khbedan is the Chief Commercial Officer, Managing Director for WeGo, with some eye-watering numbers there. But summer 2022 looks like it's going to be a memorable one, Rich.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We turn our attention now to the real estate market. So much has been written and said about the impact of Russian buyers on the Dubai real estate market over the past 2 or 3 months or so. We've had lots of questions about it. So we thought, who do we know who's an expert on Russian buyers of real estate here in Dubai? Well, Alessia Sheglova is the founder and managing director of Dacha Real Estate in Dubai, a friend of the show, and I'm delighted to say that Alessia's with us in the studio. Morning.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What impact has the situation in Ukraine had on demand for real estate among your Russian clients over the past 2 months?
We've seen a massive increase since the conflict has started. There was a huge influx of Russian clients into the market, tenants and buyers alike. And we've seen a huge increase in demand for the areas that the Russians prefer, as well as in the off-plan market.
Okay, so let's break that down because there are lots of different markets here. First of all, the high net worth individuals. Lots of headlines on things like Bloomberg and Reuters about Roman Abramovich's private jet is in Dubai at the moment. He's house hunting on the Palm. There is that tier of what we might call billionaires or oligarchs. Is that an active segment for you at the moment?
Yes, 100%. Especially we do specialize in the Palm Jumeirah, which has always been one of the prime locations that the Russians love. Russians really like anything by the sea. So we have a lot of rich, wealthy investors and buyers who are looking for big homes here.
Okay. And I'm sure there are plenty of very wealthy people, but they're always going to be the minority, aren't they? I mean, 200 million people in Russia. They're not all billionaires, far from it. So what about the pyramid of buyers? Yes, at the very top, you've got a handful of those billionaires. But what about middle-class Russians? Are we seeing much activity there?
Yes, because we do rentals as well. So we've seen a lot of young professionals relocate from Russia to come here. So let's say people in the IT sphere, and they're starting to rent homes here before buying. So we've seen many Russian clients come here, maybe rent short term for a few months, and then, of course, secure contracts for a year. And of course, I think eventually they'll end up buying something in the middle range as well.
And I know a lot of multinationals have moved significant teams over from, say, headquarters in Moscow to Dubai at the moment. I know, for example, Bloomberg is one organization that's done that because we've spoken to people from there, but there are others as well. And these are people who are on salaries. They'll have an allowance, but they're not turning up with a Samsonite suitcase full of cash, are they? So they're the renters, I guess.
They're the renters for now. And I think within 6 months, once they have their bank statements and salaries coming in, they'll end up buying with mortgages.
Okay, fine. Let's talk about the supply of real estate for that high-end market that you talk about. Again, lots of stories. Tom, you're hearing this as well. There's just not enough posh villas on Palm Jumeirah to satisfy demand. That's what you're hearing, yeah?
Ain't enough supply out there. The bigger the better at the moment, and I can't get hold of them.
I think everything has a price, and we've seen sellers increase their prices significantly because they see people are ready to pay for something that's unique, that's luxurious. So the prices have been going up because of that. For example, we started, this is not super luxury, but we started with an apartment at 4.5 million, and there was demand for the apartment, and the seller now is at 4.9, and he still has buyers looking. And he's kind of holding out because he thinks prices are going to go even further. And of course, with the luxury market, that's even more the case.
I've got a four-bed in Barsha South. Tom's got a couple of apartments in the marina. We'll chat afterwards. but they're not in those. Well, certainly my place is very suburban. It's not in those, I guess, what we call in London, golden postcodes. The Palm Jumeirah has significant demand. We're hearing a lot of talk about very strong demand in what I probably erroneously call the kind of Bulgari resort area near the Four Seasons and the Bulgari Hotel down in Dubai. It's not actually called the Bulgari.
Pearl Jumeirah.
Pearl Jumeirah, exactly. Is there appetite to buy there? Because that's many plots, isn't it?
It's plots, and it's also very large villas, very similar to Emirates Hills, and they're all individually built. So custom-built villas, also very similar to Emirates Hills, and it's by the seaside, which the Russians love. So if we compare Emirates Hills, which is, you know, more with the golf course community, Bulgari, which is the Pearl Jumeirah, is, of course, it has the brand, which also Russians love, and the seaside.
Trevor's written in, how are Russian buyers buying these real estate given the sanctions on the banking system?
The Russian banks have been sanctioned, let's say, by Europe and the West, but there's still banks in Dubai that will accept money from Russia. So there's we can accept, let's say, money from Russia because the banks are not sanctioned by the UAE system. Also, there's many cryptocurrency buyers. So they end up buying crypto with cash in Russia and then buying here with crypto.
That's not just a myth. It's really happening.
It's happening.
Yeah, I have some experience of that. And the ruble. Right at the beginning of the situation a couple of months ago, it did fall quite significantly against the US dollar and, of course, by extension, against the UAE dirham. But it seems to have recovered most, if not all of that right now. It was 21 rubles to the dirham, pretty much, before the situation. Then it went to about 38, 39. And today we're back at, what, 21, Alessia?
It's almost the same. So it lost half the value in the beginning, and now it's exactly at the same stage. Of course, there's many things that go in economically within the country to help stabilize the ruble. So right now, it's almost the same as we have started.
Okay, so there's clearly huge demand, whether it's someone renting a two-bed apartment because they've been relocated here or because you're a billionaire and you want to buy somewhere. Fine, and all points in between. One issue, one supply pinch point, is that there isn't enough of the real estate. Another one is there aren't enough agents. You at Dacha Real Estate, you've been around a long time now. You're, what, 60, 60 agents at the moment. Yes. About a third of them Russian-speaking. You're a Russian native. Is it challenging to get enough Russian-speaking agents to service the demand that's there at the moment?
Right now, because there's so many people relocating as well, so we have many CVs coming through from Russia and from Ukraine with agents who actually want to work here, and we are recruiting. So no, it's not a challenge. And the interesting thing is we've seen a lot of our non-Russian speaking agents deal with Russian buyers. So I think a lot of the younger generation do speak English, or perhaps they have a translator with them. So it hasn't stopped non-Russian agents from selling to Russians.
If you really want that 100 million dirham villa on the palm, if the person speaking Arabic, you're going to do the deal, aren't you?
You will find a way.
You will find a way to do the deal. The Russian-speaking market is a significant part of your business, but it's not all of your business. And 2 months ago, it was a relatively small part of your business, wasn't it? What other dynamics are you seeing at the market? Who else has got their checkbooks out at the moment if you look at the demographics of your client base?
We see people from all over the place. So before February, there was people from all over Europe, Netherlands, Germany, Italy, and they're still here. They're still buying. And of course, there's so many people who are based in Dubai for a long time and they want to jump on the property wagon. So they're getting mortgages, they're buying properties. So actually everybody in Dubai is out to get a piece of the real estate.
And in terms of things like KYC, know your customer, anti-money laundering laws, you know, we know they are quite strict here. Given that there's such turnover in the market, how do you, as someone running a regulated and licensed brokerage, how do you approach this if someone turns up and says, right, I've got 20 million dirhams. You've got to ask some questions, haven't you?
Yeah, we have to be super strict with where the money comes from. We don't accept any cash. We have very regular trainings with the anti-money laundering company here. So we do run KYC checks on everybody. And we have a list of people who are sanctioned who we will not do business with.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Alessia Sheglova is the Managing Director of Dacha Real Estate. Nice to see you in the studio. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk about the economy of France, because about 12 hours ago this happened.
Projet de libération de nos forces académiques, culturelles, entrepreneuriales. Ce projet...
Cultural and entrepreneurial, even I can understand that. That's Emmanuel
well
Macron.
Done.
He won the election last night. But what does it mean for the market? Delighted to be joined on the line on Microsoft Teams by not one, but two Gallic correspondents. First of all, friend of the show, we say good morning to Daniel Richards, senior economist at Emirates NBD. Morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Richards.
And you are a man of hidden talents, because who knew that you're French? Your middle name is Marc with a C and you have a French passport. Bonjour.
Bonjour. Yes, I do, but my French isn't as good as it should be, nor is my English this morning either, with this husky voice.
All right. I think it sounds great, mate. I think you're putting it on. No, joking apart. Good to have you with us, Daniel. Thanks very much indeed. Also joining us on Microsoft Teams is the French businessman based here in Dubai, Goan de Gac, General Manager for the Middle East and Africa at Prelude Payment Services. Goan, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Pleasure to be here and to share my opinion and also what I've been through last night.
Okay, well, so it was a busy night for French people, and I'm sure you voted here in the UAE as well. Mixed reports about the election result. I was reading Le Monde in English this morning. They called it a tepid victory for Monsieur Macron, but he won by about 18 points, which is a fairly healthy margin. What was your take?
I would say that it's not really a really, really strong win. As you see, 18 points, but you have a large abstention with more than, I think, 28, 29%. Means we can say that he won, definitely. It cannot be discussed. But then we have many, many consequences on such elections. I think Macron has to be really, really working hard on the next coming months to be sure that he's going to address all issues that the population is facing in France.
So let's talk about some of the economic issues, because we're the business breakfast, so we are going to look at the economics, the politics, the cultural, the social is fascinating, but we're the business breakfast, so we'll look at the economics. Rising cost of living in France, as many, many other places at the moment, and that was a real battleground within the election, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, in France, we have been really confronted with a purchasing power problem. In the last, I would say, years, with the yellow jackets, we have been confronted with large demonstrations in the streets. And this has been impacting all the French policy and Emmanuel Macron policy. It means that currently he has really to work on this social side and really to invest on the population, on infrastructure, and to develop a strong economy again.
Daniel, if I can turn to you, looking at the economics of it, I read The Economist magazine take on it this morning, and their phrase was very simply, Europe breathes a heavy sigh of relief this morning. The euro is gaining slightly this morning. And the point The Economist make is that even though Marine Le Pen didn't want to take France, strictly speaking, out of the European Union, The Economist argue that a victory for Le Pen would have been effectively Frexit, or France leaving the European Union. And where would that leave the entire European economy and European project? Just how profound was this?
Yeah, so in terms of the ongoing stability, the Macron win is pretty important, given he has been a fan or a supporter of greater European integration. And if Le Pen had won, okay, she had come out and said, okay, Frexit is no longer on the cards as such. But the kind of inroads she wanted to take and the steps she wanted to take with regards to carving out greater freedom, if you will, for France, is kind of along the lines of what we've been seeing maybe in Eastern Europe, and just eroding that solid core at the heart of the European project, of which France has been a key part since the inception, really. So if that were to have happened, and a greater move towards fiscal, collective fiscal action, as we've seen since the pandemic, would start to have been taken off the cards completely, more like.
So Gowan mentioned that Macron's job is to reinvigorate the economy. I mean, which world leader hasn't got a job to invigorate their national economy? But how do you do that in France when you've got, as both of you have alluded to, the yellow jackets or the gilets jaunes on the streets of Paris?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And as Gowan said, he has to really look at supporting everybody in society. There is this criticism. He is the president of the rich, but obviously cost of living crises hit everybody differently, and the poor are always hardest hit. But France's inflation rate, 5.1%, is very high, and people are no doubt struggling a lot. But when you look at some of his neighbours, which are closer to 10%, it's actually coming out quite well. But of course, when it's hitting people's pockets, they won't see that. So more needs to be done to ensure that that support is there for those people that need it the most.
Gowan Legac, if I can bring you in here, and I'm going to quote Carlos Ghosn, who's the former CEO of Nissan Renault, because we know he's been very vocal over the past 72 hours because the arrest warrant was issued for him. He's in Lebanon at the moment. But one of the points that he made in his various interviews over the weekend, and he argued as a former CEO or business leader, France has an issue, it has a problem in that, and Macron, he said, is part of this, in that it wants to control CEO pay. Large CEO pay is not popular in France. And yet, Mr. Ghosn argued, if you want to attract and retain the very best CEOs, they work in a global marketplace and they'll just be poached by America or Hong Kong or China. How much truth or validity is there to that argument?
You know, it's already a long time that I'm not living in France, but I can feel also the French distress. You know, many, many employees can see the large or important amount of salaries that CEO can have in France. And this can create some, I would say, problematic situations for employees, at least when you have a CEO who can earn 1 million per month and is still paid 1,000 euro or 1,200 euro per month. The difference is, and the gap is so important that it's creating some really tensions in the population. And as we were just mentioning, with this inflation, it's stressing even for more or less more. Means we have really to adapt and to find, I would say, a balance in this salary, or maybe to increase maybe the tax, or maybe to find a solution to be sure that the population has an understanding about what is a good salary for them, and also to adjust the politic for that.
Gowan, thanks very much indeed. Appreciate that. That's Gowan Legac, General Manager here in Dubai with Prelude Payment Services. Daniel Richards at Emirates NBD. A final 20-second summary from you. What chance do you give Emmanuel Macron of actually achieving his goals over the next 5 years?
Well, you know, everybody has these goals. It's very difficult, as we've seen over the past couple of years. We had the pandemic and then we had the war in Ukraine. So there are always setbacks. But I guess now he will come in reinvigorated to try and press forward with everything he's put in train previously.
Gentlemen, thanks very much indeed. Really appreciate your time this morning speaking to us the morning after the night before Emmanuel Macron winning the election in France. Thomas, did you follow it closely last night? I mean, it's not like the American election where, you know, we all follow it very, very closely, but it's a bit of a deal.
Yeah, no, and I was out with several French residents or citizens here in the UAE who were watching with keen interest over lunch into the afternoon yesterday. So I didn't wait up for the results, but it was one of the first things I checked when I got up this morning.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.